It's me, Dawn, and I'm back at you from my home. As we know, we're all quarantined. This world has gone crazy. But I decided to spice my channel up a little bit. I'm wanting to start doing more true crime. I'm into more of the passion that's happened with kids who are suicidal and depressed. I am taking classes to become a psychologist to work with children who are needing someone to talk to or to just understand. And I'm going to do a few segments on a popular topic from April the 20th of 1999. This was actually my senior year as well. And this was, if you don't know, it was the Columbine tragedy. A lot of people use massacre. Yes, it truly was. But I hate to use that simply because I have empathy and sympathy for both sides and some understanding because I too was bullied and had some depression back in that time because of the way kids were doing me. And we were the outcast. We wore the black clothing. We listened to Marilyn Manson. We wore the Marilyn Manson clothing. We were bullied and pushed around, lied on a lot. Kids were actually telling teachers that they heard us talking of drinking blood, of sacrificing children and animals, and this is no way true. Okay. I'm not saying that what the boys did was justified, but I do think it was a lot due to their ridicule, and a lot of people don't see it that way, that bullying is not that, and they think because it was music that they listened to, like Marilyn Manson, Rammstein, KMFDM, just upbeat music, White Zombie, the video games such as Doom that they played. So people are blaming it on this. Music is a feeling. Music is something that you listen to escape the world. Video games are violent. They're going to continue to be violent because in this day and time, it's violence. Kids were brought into violence, and that's what they know. That's what they see. And that's not ever going to be stopped. So, yes, I do believe guns need to be harder to purchase, especially if you have a disability or some kind of a mental disability. Yes, it should be harder made to purchase such weapons. But what I really want to talk to is, in researching this case, I've done it for years. You know, I didn't want to get out there because it's a very controversial topic. I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. I, however, feel sorry for everyone who was involved in this tragedy and who was hurt. Now, do I blame it on the music and see the views of most people? No, I don't. And I do not blame it on the parents. Okay, for one, guys, kids are very, very, very good at hiding their true feelings, their depression. Sue Klebold, for example, was a good mom. She loved her kids. She was always there. She had two boys. I'm not going to bring up the other's name because they don't like to be mentioned. They don't want to be associated with this. And she was a great mother. She was always there for her kids. She was always supportive. If they had school plays, whatever they did, she was there. Dealing with a regular teenage kid. He played sports. He was in the CHIPS program, which is for very bright and talented children. He had a lot going for him. Now, Dylan wasn't your typical outcast kid. He did have friends. He had a nice home. He was upper middle class. But on the inside, Dylan had a much bigger problem. He was depressed. He felt left out. He had a crush on a girl, and he thought that she didn't notice him, which really tore his heart out. I believe a lot of Dylan's anger came in too when he was introduced to Eric Harris. Now, Eric Harris was about a half a year older, 2 years older than Dill, and he was moved around a lot as a child because of his father's job with the military, and they finally settled down in Littleton, Colorado. They had a nice home in an upper middle class neighborhood and was just an all around normal looking family. Now, deep down inside, Eric Harris had a depression. He had a dark side. He blamed a lot on his father because he said, as moving around every school he went to, he had to start from the bottom of the ladder and work his way up, proving himself to kids. And we all know kids are cruel. Schools are cruel, and most schools are all about sports. The football players, the soccer players, the cheerleaders, the baseball, that's just most schools. And schools tend to not see what is going on. I call it the real world with kids who's not into sports. So these kids were being bullied and pushed. They tried to take that and turn it around to they were just psycho, crazy kids, and that was not the case. These kids were taunted, bullied, and if you watch some of the videos that they made, you can see the football players, as so they called the jocks, who would walk by, shove, push, call names. They were even afraid to walk by tables where these people sit. They would avoid it, and you can see that as they walked into the classroom. Now, when these tapes were put out there, they were hours and hours upon filming. These boys filmed with their camera. There was a lot of comedy, having a good time being teenage boys. But the media, social media, cops, they split these up, these tapes, these videos, to see what you wanted to see, to kind of make it look like they enacted and reacted these events that was going to come up on April the 20th of 1999. So, it's just like with any other tragedy of this stance that you see on TV, it's going to be cropped up, chopped up, and dismissed off like, or how they see fit. You're never really going to see the true side. So, that's why I suggest you read Sue Klebold's book, A Mother's Reckoning. Now, this broke my heart. This woman was put down. She was blamed as being a bad mom. She went through some really, really bad depression over this. And we will talk about that a little bit when we come back from this commercial break. So stay tuned and I will be right back. Hey guys, I'm back. Welcome to True Crime with Dawn. Okay, so in this segment, we're going to talk a little bit about Dylan Klebold's mom, Sue Klebold. Now, Sue Klebold was a very hands-on mom. She loved doing things with her kids. If she thought they had a problem, she was there for them. She knew in her mind and in her head that she was a great mom. She was the type of mom who looked through their things in the room. She was the type of mom who, if their kids had a skit, a play, and as in Debolt, as in Dylan's case, he played Little League softball, baseball, and she was hands-on with Dill. She loved her kids, and there was a lot of lies that went around pertaining to that Sue Klebold was a bad mom who just let her kids go, and that wasn't the case at all. Now, no one wants to believe that their son, daughter, kid are going to inflict pain upon someone. None of us want to believe this. Sue knew that she had been a good mom, but she allowed everyone else, after the tragedies, she allowed everyone else to get her feelings to where she thought she was a bad mom. She looked down on herself. She was suffering. She had lost 30 pounds. She wanted to pick up, move, change her name. She doubted her own mothership. Now, Sue Klebold seemed like the type of mom every child would want. Everyone seemed to love Sue. And the government and the cops, the agencies, their own governor of Colorado had posted that Sue Klebold was, in fact, a bad mom and that this was all her fault. And we all know how hard it is to raise kids. I mean, no matter how much you're there for them and you love them, you're not going to stop them from feeling depressed and lonely. Now, Susan Frances Klebold was born March the 25th of 1945. She is an American author and activist. She was the mother and still is the mother of Dylan Klebold. Dylan is one of the shooters in the Columbine tragedy on April the 20th of 1999. Sue was born in Columbus, Ohio, and worked in assistant service for the disabled for many years. Sue was a art graduate of Ohio State University. Sue Klebold did write a book, A Mother's Reckoning, and I would suggest you guys read that. It's so heartbreaking because people think that she should not be allowed to be normal and live a life again after her being depressed for so long. And in writing this book, she turned the profits over to suicide prevention so that she could help grow the awareness, because no matter what your ideology is on this subject, she lost a son to suicide. And she blames herself. So her comeback and to help to make her feel better, she's donating any profits from the book to mental health charities, research and suicide prevention, and hoping for solutions that will help parents and professionals detect and treat signs of trouble in their children, youth, or actually just anybody. Sue Klebold was a very good hands-on mom, and they were sued, I think she said, by 32 families during this, and she was actually afraid that she was going to lose her home. So I really don't understand why anybody would want to inflict pain upon Sue, because yes, everyone lost innocent children, parents in this. People got long-term suffering. There is going to be people with PTSD from this, and Sue suffers from the same thing. She is only human, guys. She is only human. So, to inflict pain upon this woman who has also lost a child, plus she has to live with the fact of knowing that her son caused so many others pain. So she's got double suffering. She's afraid to live. She's afraid to face society. And people wonder why it took her so many years to come out. She was terrified, guys. She was terrified. I think she even said in one point in one of her interviews that she wasn't sure if she wanted to live. Her moment of awakening was when she understood in her own mind of what it felt like. What it felt like to not be in control of your own mind, to have the depression, the anxiety, and Sue herself got put on medication. And only then did she become well enough to where she could speak. Now, Sue Klebold did reach out to victims and victims' families of this terrible tragedy to say she was sorry. Some replied back in good ways and had forgave her, but there are some who are still holding a deep grudge and doesn't want to hear anything the poor lady has to say, which to me is not a very good way of getting past this, because any way to get past any of this is to forgive. You have to forgive, not only to be forgiven that person, but for yourself, so that you're not kept a prisoner in that grief. And Sue Klebold has learned this, and I believe if you read her book, you can watch her interviews on YouTube Live. You too could also learn a lot from her. And with that being said, we're going to take a small break, and I will be right back with more to come. Welcome back to segment 3 of the Columbine Tragedy, guys. I am here talking about my beliefs and understandings of the Columbine tragedy and my feelings, as I know not everyone is going to have these feelings, and I will probably get a lot of hate. But I'm looking at the psychological side of this story. Now, these two teenagers went to school at Columbine High, where they were in their senior year. Dylan Klebold had been talking to people about, he had been visited colleges. He had applied to 4 colleges. He had, just a weekend prior on Friday, he had been picking out his dorm room and measuring it with his father because he wanted the biggest dorm room. Now, does this sound like a kid that is getting ready to commit suicide or wanting to die or planning on the tragedy? It doesn't to me. So how did they expect a mother to think her son, who is working, going to school, keeping good grades, working for sound production, picking out his dorm room even. He even went with other couples and rented a limo the weekend before this tragedy. That happened on a Tuesday, to prom, dressed fully in a tuxedo and was happy. And went with his friend Robin. Now, Robin was the friend who was 18 years old and had purchased the guns for the boys. Now, Robin was looked into, and she was not considered a suspect because what she purchased for the boys was not illegal because it was not a handgun. Now, the other gun that the boys got was purchased from a friend that worked at them with the pizza place. And it was a handgun, so this guy got 6 years. 6 years, guys. So never purchase guns for minors. Okay, these boys had this meticulously planned out. They were tired of being bullied. They were tired of being hurt. Dylan got up that Tuesday morning on April the 20th, 1999, may I add, in quotation, Hitler's birthday. Dylan had not been writing this in his pages. Now, people think he had a journal. He did not have a journal. Dylan only had pages stuck here and there throughout his folders. And Dylan had only wrote about hurt, wanting to hurt himself, that he had been cutting himself, that he, like I said in the first episode, that he had a crush on this girl, but he didn't think she felt the same way. He thought he was not capable of being loved and that no one wanted to love him. Eric, on the other hand, had a lot of hatred and a lot of pain built up on the inside of him. And he wrote he wanted to kill everyone. He wanted to wipe out the world. I believe when these boys got these guns, it made them feel in control. As he, quote unquote, said, godlike, he felt like he was in control and above everyone now, everyone that had ever bullied or hurt them. And I believe he had introduced Dylan into this simply because he didn't want to do it alone. When you put someone with that much anger and resentment build up with a person that is suicidal and depressed and has been bullied, this is an accident waiting to happen. It is not so much an accident, but it's like a bomb getting ready to explode. Now, these boys on that morning They planned it out, thought it out very well. Dylan got up really early. His mom was awake. She opens her bedroom door because she hears Dylan thumbling down the stairs. She yells, "Deal? Bye, Mom." And he slams the door and speeds out of the driveway. Well, she had thought that he was having a problem with maybe a friend or was down, and she had asked her husband to speak with him. Now, Sue's husband, Dylan's dad, had noticed the week prior that Dylan's voice had changed and it was deepened, and he had asked Sue, did she think something was wrong? And that he had noticed a change in Dylan's voice, and they kind of shoved it off as he was maybe having some problems with some friends or a girl. And they kind of just let it go because he had showed no other signs. But Sue says she regrets not trying to have a conversation with him that morning. Because she had asked her husband if he was going to be home when Dill got home that evening, and if he could have a talk with Dylan, and this would never happen. The reason the boys got up so early, they had planned on putting a bomb in a nearby field that would throw the cops off from what they were doing. Now, a lot of misconstrued social media posts and bulletins did not get this right. This was not a planned school shooting, guys. This was not planned school shooting. This was a planned bombing. These boys made homemade pop bombs that they had gotten the powder from working at a fireworks shop the year before and hoarding all this back. They were paid with fireworks, boxes and boxes of fireworks, and that's where they got their powder. Now, these boys had been making these bombs, these little bombs, and they planned on putting two big bombs in which they packed in through the school doors, okay, put in one at one pillar, one at the other pillar in the common area, aka the lunchroom, to where they planned on blowing it up because they knew exactly 11:14 was when the cafeteria was most full, and it would knock out those columns, and a lot of people would die, and the survivors would come running out, and as they come running out, then they would shoot. But this didn't go as planned. They were sitting in their car waiting for these bombs to go off, and when these bombs didn't go off, they decided to get out of the car and take it in matters into their own hands, and this is where they began to shoot people. Now, when Eric was pulling in to the lot is where he ran into his friend Brooks Brown. Brooks Brown was Dylan's friend forever since elementary school, but Eric and Brooks had a fallen out the year prior, and Brooks was actually on his hit list on his website, and his parents had reported this on Eric that his son was on this website, and they were supposed to induct a search in the home, and they never did. So that could have been one thing that may have stopped this if they would have actually followed up with that. But Brooks Brown had actually smoothed things over with Eric, which could have been what saved his life. That morning in the parking lot, Brooks said he had noticed earlier that Eric wasn't in first or second period, and when he went out to smoke, he noticed that Eric had come in. Dylan wasn't there either, and that was strange. None of the friends that they hang out with were with them, and usually they were. Now, he knew that Eric and Dylan liked to get good grades, and he didn't come and take the test. And when Brooks, he's in, you know, a friendly cussing like friends do between each other, where are you at, blah, blah, blah. You missed a test, and this was half of the grade for the year. And Eric, with a blank look on his face, Brooks said it was almost a scary look that he had never seen before. He told Brooks, "It doesn't matter. Brooks, I like you now. Get out of here." Brooks said he thought about it, but he didn't think about it, and he thought it was just going to be some kind of a prank, and he walked on out to smoke. And as he got farther away from the school, he heard what he thought were fireworks, or maybe from the nail guns from the housing projects that were building houses nearby. But then he realized it wasn't. And as he got farther away from the school, he got scared and noticed all the cops and the helicopters surrounding the school. This is when he knew something was wrong and tried to call and report it after calling and letting his dad know. These boys murdered 13 people that day, wounding 34. 12 were children that were murdered, and one was a teacher, a very well-loved, known teacher. When they walked into that library to shoot people, they were saying, "All you ill-meffers with white hats, stand up." Now, they knew that the jocks only wore white hats. And reading the interview with some of the kids that were in there, if they had a white hat on, they were taking them off and hiding them. They had a vendetta on the people who had picked on them, bullied them, and hurt them, and made their life hell. They made it known when they were in that library that they were going to get the revenge upon the people who had hurt them. So, this is the direct message, guys. This just shows you it was the motive behind this was bullying. They were tired of it. They were depressed. They were hurt. Now, not everyone who is depressed is going to go do a homicidal killing, a school shooting, a mass murder. Now, this doesn't likely happen, but it can happen. And this is what we need to look at when we're looking at the bigger picture here. No, it was not from music, video games, movies, Natural Born Killers, the movie that they watched. This was not. Did it maybe give them some inclination of what to do? Maybe. But this did not make them want to do it. What made them want to carry this through was the bullying and the hate. And the kids who picked on them, who made their life hell, okay? Made their life complete hell to where they didn't want to live anymore. And it is sad to me that these kids had to do this to get the bullying in their life stopped. They thought they had to. Does it make it right? No, it doesn't. But this is something, guys, that we need to notice going on in our own school systems. I've noticed it with my school system, with my children's school systems. If you're not an athlete, you're low on the totem pole. The school really does not know what's going on. They don't know what's going on in their own school to the point two kids actually commit suicide every day of their life due to this. Now, the statistics show that it's higher in gay, transgender, lesbian communities and kids who are afraid to be themselves. But guys, it doesn't just have to be a sexual orientation anymore, even though that's the highest. It can be kids like Dylan, who had plenty of friends, put a smile on, looked happy on the outside, was well known. He worked fixing audio for the school plays. One of the girls, Rachel's, he had actually saved her entire play the year before. So this goes to show you guys, the kids that you see smiling every day, if you're a parent and your kid comes home and they're okay, they say they're okay. You see something out of the ordinary, ask them. Don't be afraid. Don't try to make it better. If someone's telling this kid that they're ugly, that they're stupid, don't always, "No, you're not. You're beautiful to me." That's not going to make it any better. Listen to them talk. One thing that I learned from Sue Klebold is when you're talking, whether they talk a lot or they just dismiss it, ask them, "Is there any more? Is there anything else you would like to say?" Let them talk. Let them be heard. Let them get it out. This is one thing that can help. And guys, we need more of this in schools. We need more notoriety for all kids, not just the athletes, not just the rich. No matter what class, what sport, what grade, what color of your skin, no matter what, all kids have issues. My son himself has told me before that he wanted to die. Now, my son is 15 years old, and a lot of his attitude, a lot of his actions puts me in mind of the way Sue Klebold actually introduced her son, Dylan. And this scares me. So So I'm going into this with an open mind, and I'm studying this case so I can learn to protect my kids and maybe help the schools here. If you have any suggestions, please leave them in a message. If you would like to hear more about this case, leave me a message below. I can go on and on about this case, but I'm going to drop this here, and I will be doing a part two. The more I know, I want to do the next one on their friend Brooks Brown. I'm currently reading his book and studying up on this. So peace out. I love you guys. Don't forget to stop the bullying, stop the hate. Always, always, always love your kids and let them speak. Don't try to make things better. With that being said, I'm out. You guys have a lovely night and stay safe with this quarantine. Wear your mask, wash your hands, and use that sanitizer, guys. Peace out. Bye-bye now.